Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Hey, this is Josh Keaton, and you are listening to the Geekcast Radio Network. It's your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man here, and I'm swinging by the Geekcast Radio Network.
Welcome to Tooncast Beyond, a interview with Josh Keaton. I am your host, Steve Jordan Mike, and joining me is Pecan Court Michael. Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going. We're going to be talking to Josh Keaton, voice of Spyro, Young Revolver Ocelot, Green Lantern, Spider-Man, and many, many, many things. Jack Darby from Transformers Prime, Green Lantern, and a bunch of other stuff, just to let everybody know. Not sure what was wrong with Josh's Skype connection. It was kind of wonky. I'm going to try to clean up the audio as best I can, but he kept cutting in and out. We tried everything we could. It just didn't really work. So let's go ahead and get to the interview.
These guys at the GCRN would make great Green Lantern Corps members. Seriously, who are these guys?
Hello and welcome to Tooncast Beyond. I am one of your hosts, Steve Joe and Mike, and joining me for the first time here in Tooncast Beyond is Pecan Court Michael. Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going. And in the latest Toon Beyond interview, we welcome the voice of Jack Darby, Spider-Man from many, many, many different things, the New Goblin, Green Lantern, and all the other voices that are in his head, Mr. Josh Keaton. Hey, Josh, how are you?
What's up, man? How's it going?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. I don't know. I just had the need to do an interview, I guess. It's not really that, oh, well, let's see what Josh is up to, but it was just one of those things where I wanted to pick your brain and all the stuff that that you've done, as well as get some inside scoop on some stuff, maybe. So before we get started, can you give us the scoop on what's going on with you, if you can reveal anything? I know, you know, we live in a world where voice actors and actors in general have tons of NDAs, but what's going on with you?
It's not the let's see. It's a game project that is soon to be released that I can't really talk about, can't really deny what it is, but you should know probably in the next few weeks. And really, aside from that, that's the new stuff that's going on right now. We're kind of in a little bit of a slow time. You know, we're in between airings of seasons, and you know, aside from that's the interesting stuff. There's the what I day job voiceover stuff, which is, you know, promo work, you know, on networks you'll hear, you know, coming up next on blah, blah, blah.
What networks are you doing voiceover for?
I do announcements for the Hub. And I'm also the sleazy promo guy for Extra with the salacious, gossip of the day.
Oh, that's great. That's great. All right. Now I read online that you are a California boy. Where exactly did you grow up, and did you always want to get into acting or Hollywood and all that good stuff?
Called BFE, Hacienda Heights, and it's just outside of Los Angeles. It's a little suburb in the San Gabriel Valley. That's where I was born and raised. And part of the question. Oh, how I got. I have three sisters, and the oldest one, she was doing like beauty pageants and stuff like that. Not quite. I mean, this is as crazy as all the toddler and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Because my mother is an incredible singer. And so she would go and she would compete in that, and she would win a bunch of them. And I would just kind of tag along, and I would really just go to these things, and before video games, I would always bring my Nintendo once that was like a thing. But before that, I would like bring my snorkel and fins, and that was like my vacation. You know, we would go to these pageants, and I didn't care that there were cute girls there because I was too young for all of that. I would just bring my snorkel and fins and go pretend I was diving in the pool. And since Nintendo became a thing, I would bring my Nintendo to the hotel and I'd set it up and I'd just stay in the room all day while she was doing her thing, and I'd play video games. And by the time I realized, hey, there's like really, really cute girls here that I should be going to talk to. She was already close. But so do that. And she got into the business through those. She got spotted by an agent at a talent, one of the talent competitions, and she started going out and auditioning for commercials and whatnot. And the way I got into it, I tagged along on a commercial audition with her. You know, my dad worked all the time, so my mom was schlepped auditions, and I had to be somewhere. So I was at this audition, and I ended up getting called in to audition, and I ended up getting the commercial. She's never let me hear the end of that. And
what was the commercial?
Something, some like kids clothing thing. And, cause I was always like a little precocious kid. I would never shut up. I would always be talking. And, you know, I thought I was a little adult, and my dad's, an English teacher, and I always would make like pronunciation my thing. So I would always be overpronouncing all the consonants and doing all that. And my geekdom started really, really early. But so that's pretty much how I got into it. Is just kind of tagging along on my sister's audition, and then that led to, you know, the child actor thing, and did that for a while, and Mike has taken me a bunch of different places. For like in my teens, I was in a boy band when that was a thing. They're making a comeback now, got to travel the world with that, and just busy with on camera work here and there. And when the writer's strike happened, I kind of had like this perfect storm, but in a negative way, I guess. A lot of work slowed down because of the writer's strike, and at the same time, my on camera agent, or the guy that represented me at this agency, kind of out of nowhere quit the business. He got married and he moved out of state. And so I was like here at this agency where I didn't really have a champion, and there was not a lot of work on camera to go around anyway. And at the same time, the voiceover industry was not at all affected by this writer's strike. It was really just on camera. So I land a couple of really, really awesome parts at that point, and things just started snowballing. And flash forward several years, and I've been quite a bit of voiceover. So that in a nutshell, kind of how it went from beginning till now.
Yeah. Speaking of your television career, I mean, you know, I didn't even know this until I looked at your IMDb, but according to them, and they are known to be wrong sometimes, you have been in such shows as The Secret World of Alex Mack.
Yes.
What is it with almost every voice actor that we've talked to here at GeekCastRadio.com in the last, like, I don't know, 2.5 months? Everybody starts out in soaps. You've been on General Hospital and Young and the Restless.
Well, those are all like, you know, little things here and there. Really, when you're an actor, whatever work you can get. And,
yeah.
You know, some people, a lot of it is timing. A lot of it is just luck. A lot of it is, and in all of those situations, you always got to be prepared and do your best work when that opportunity comes along, if it does. But, I mean, really, you can't be picky because there's a very limited amount of work and there are tons of people that want that work. And so you kind of just got to take it where it comes. And if that means doing something that's not really exactly what you would want to be doing, you still got to look at it as practice. And so, you know, everything has something to offer. You know, soaps are great training because you're really just thinking on your feet. They film an episode of them a day. So, I mean, you're getting writing changes as you're doing the scene, essentially, and there's like no time for rehearsal, and you kind of have to.
Yeah.
It's
a grind.
But I mean, it really, if you take it seriously, definitely can get a lot out of it. You know, whatever people want to say about soaps or whatever, but you got to take the work when it's there.
Well, what kind of acting do you prefer to do? Do you prefer on camera? Do you prefer like animation voice acting or video games? I mean, is there one that you think that you like the best?
Because I like fully realizing a character, whether that be physicality, whether that be physicality is a big part, and having all of that in person to interact, all of that is awesome. It's a lot of fun. I still approach things like voice acting in the same way that I would approach them. I still do this character, you know, really working out the character's backstory, working out the character's motivations, all of that. It's the same type of process. You just don't have the stuff that you actually interact with.
Let's sling some webs, because you've been in a multitude of Spider-Man franchises, both animation and video game. I think the first time I heard you as Spidey was in Spectacular Spider-Man. How did that come about?
Well, I kind of had like a long history with Spider-Man before that. I was originally cast to play Spider-Man in the first movie game, and what ended up happening after I had recorded all that, they ended up getting clearance to use Toby for the video game.
Mm-hmm.
They, I guess, didn't want to waste all the audio that they had done with me, so they put in this hidden, it wasn't really hidden, like you beat the game and you get to play it again through as
you.
Me in the goblins. But I didn't play that. So I'm assuming, and do pickups here and there, but I'm assuming for the most part it was the same game. Really just like a reskin. And so after that, I kind of became the de facto Harry Osborn. I was Harry Osborn in the second movie game, and I can't remember if I was even in the third game or not. I think I might have done additional, just incidental voices here and there. And in Friend or Foe, I was New Goblin, and James Arnold Taylor played Spider-Man in that game, and he ended up playing Harry Osborn in the show. But I'd done a lot of Spider-Man stuff, and then really just came along as an audition. It was no different than any other audition that I would get from my voiceover, where they'll call you in. And, the process varies. Sometimes if you have a studio at home, which I do, I didn't at that time, but, you know, you can record the audition from your house if you want, or you go into your agent's office and you read the stuff. And that's what I did. I sent in my audition, or I didn't send in my audition. I went into my agents, they recorded it, and they sent it back to, like I made the first round of cuts. So then they called me in, and I went into the studio and I recorded a callback audition there. Excited about that, because I was like, oh man, it's a new Spider-Man show, and Spider-Man's always been my favorite comic book character. And so I was super, super excited about it, and really hoping that I would get it. And finally, when they went through all the cuts, I was the last guy standing.
Awesome. Cool. What was it like doing Shattered Dimensions? Because that wasn't just you. That was like almost every major Spidey voice that has ever been. Tell us about Shattered Dimensions.
Well, Shattered Dimensions was a lot of fun. Mainly seeing the product, the finished product. Because as a Spider-Man fan, there's stuff all over the place that was really cool. And I got to I'm friends with Dan Gilvezan, so it was cool to kind of reconnect with him when we did some of the promotion for the game. But to be honest, the process itself was not much different than any other video game. And by that, I mean, I went in, there would be, you would do 4-hour sessions. I can't remember exactly how many I did, but, you know, you go in and you record 4 hours worth of stuff, and then they put it in the game. So you're not reading opposite anybody. You're not, it's really just you in the booth in front of a mic with the voice director and the engineer. And the thing that was cool about that, though, is that I got to work with Jamie Thomason, who was the voice director for Spectacular Spider-Man. So it was really just like, it was like walking back to
a little reunion.
Yeah. And I, at that point, I don't believe that I got to meet Chris Barnes at that time, because I'd never met him up until I think it was Edge of Time. I think Spider-Man Edge of Time was the first time I met Chris Barnes. And that's departure from the usual video game recording norm, because in that we actually got to be in the and act opposite each other and all of that, and that was fun. I wish more video games were done that way, because it gives so much more life to the performance. Because I mean, you could go in there with all of your choices and really have everything worked out, but it's still just your work, as opposed to being able to play off of somebody, because they might completely have a different take on something than you imagined. And if you roll with that, then what you're going to end up with is going to be much more organic and much more realistic than that you just came up with. So it allows for a lot of happy accidents and awesomeness. So that's bad. And that's how most animation is. And most animation, they're read it like a radio drama, where everybody's at their own mic and you just go through the script and play it out with the appropriate pacing and everything. And that, to a certain extent, is how a lot of the cinema scenes in Edge of Time were done. There was one scene she was playing opposite myself, because I also did the voice for the CEO, which was also Peter. But when he's much older, he's like in his 50s or so. Well, actually, he appears to be in his like 50s or 60s, but it's like a significant amount of time after that. So he's like an older guy. And that was cool. That getting to actually have this play opposite myself was odd, but really a lot of fun.
That's kind of cool. Yeah, we had talked to Dan Gilvezan about his part in Shattered Dimensions, and he was telling us about how different the Spider-Man 2099 character was compared to his original Spider-Man.
Yeah, absolutely. And his Spider-Man is the one I grew up watching. I grew up watching Amazing Friends, and I love him. And I think that Dan is the best kind of cheeseball, and definitely voice I heard when I was reading Spider-Man comics, you know, and definitely took a lot from what he did, took a lot of the spirit from what he did. But yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he's the Spider-Man that I grew up with. And when I read Spider-Man comics, I hear his voice. It goes way back.
I think for me, it was so really quickly before we move on. The thing for me on Shattered Dimensions was, when you hear him, it is so different. It's same voice, but it's such a different inflection because of...
A little darker.
Yeah, it's a lot... No. It's not just a little... It's a lot darker. Compare Amazing Friends to Shattered Dimensions. Amazing Friends is like lollipops and candy. And Shattered Dimensions is like black kryptonite or something.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. To be honest, I would have loved to hear Dan Gilvezan as Spider-Man Noir. I would have loved it, because... His voice has a lot of that old time. I don't even know what the word would be to describe it. Like it would. I would have loved to hear him as Spider-Man Noir, because I could hear him in like this old gumshoe noir detective drama. I could hear his voice in that all day long, and I would have been really, really curious to see what he would have sounded like as Spider-Man Noir.
Huh. It's too bad they didn't just have you know, each voice actor record all the lines, and then you get, you know, you finish the game, and then and then you get the Easter egg. You can swap them all around at will.
It would be like 1,000 hours of video game voiceover. That would not work.
It might get a little expensive, but the fans would dig it.
That's almost like a Wally Burr session, for crap's sake. Oh, boy.
So switching gears, let's talk about Green Lantern.
Yes.
That's it. My boys. I got a 6-year-old, Aiden, and a 4-year-old, Gavin. They love this show.
Awesome. Glad to hear
And
it.
Honestly, I didn't know this was you until I checked IMDb. But it's awesome.
Yeah, man. That's great.
So how did the Green Lantern animated series project come up for you? Just a regular audition?
It was a regular audition, but the casting process for that was so much faster than it was for Spider-Man. It was spectacular Spider-Man. There were, you know, like months between hearing that I got a call back or that I was going to come in again for it or that I got the job. Like, I was waiting, and that was tough. Whereas Green Lantern... and this just shows you how insecure actors are. I didn't believe I got it. Like, the whole time that I was recording the first couple episodes, I mean, it was one audition. I went in for one audition. I read it. I didn't really have time to research the character, and I wasn't really that familiar with Green Lantern, so I was really just kind of flying by the seat of my pants. I looked at a character sketch of him and just kind of made some real quick choices right there about how I thought he should sound. I wanted to try to put forth a voice that really made his jaw and his chest sound massive. And he's just a man guy. And so everything was just real spur of the moment choices. I think I had to read the oath. And then I heard back like a week later that I booked it. And I didn't believe it. The whole time I was like, I went in on one audition. It's like a week later and I'm going in to record. I'm like, there's no way. So the whole time, the first three episodes, I was like checking the lobby and seeing like if my replacement was going to be waltzing anytime soon. that was crazy. I didn't even really have time to research anything until right before I started going into record. And so I had to call one of my friends who is a huge Green Lantern buff, and in a roundabout way asked what I should start reading if I was curious about, you know, like, hey, you know, I've been reading stuff about Green Lantern, and I wanted to check out some of the Hal stuff. What do you think I should check out? You know, because I couldn't tell him, hey, I'm doing this. I had signed my life away already. He gave me some places to start, and I read a bunch as much as I could before I started recording. And I think the thing that I drew most of my inspiration in terms of the Hal character from was it was Secret Origins. There's a section in there where he shows up to list on his 18th day in his flight jacket, knowing full well that his family is pretty much going to disown him, and still does it. And that pretty much summed up Hal for me. I mean, like that is what I drew my inspiration for his character from, and really just went from there and started reading more and more about him and all of that. But yeah, I mean, that one was one that I wasn't as familiar with, and I went in flying pretty blind.
Oh, but I've had, wow.
The chemistry with the rest of the cast was pretty instant. I mean, I've worked with Gray on so many other things. I've worked with Kevin Michael Richardson on a ton of things, so it's like we're already pretty buddy buddy, and so the Hal and the Kilowog dynamic was pretty effortless. And then this was the first time I worked with Jason Zach, who played Caesar, and he's fantastic, great guy. And and yeah, I mean, even the guest cast on that show is the guest and the supporting cast, they're all phenomenal, and a lot of them are people that I've worked with before, and a lot of them are people that I've just seen a lot of actors from Seinfeld, and I've had like this weird renaissance with Seinfeld, where when it was out, I never really watched it. I think I was too young to really appreciate a lot of the humor.
Right.
And once I got a few years older, I started watching it. It's like, this is a funny show. And so many great little characters on there. And a lot of those characters have turned around and they're in tons and tons of VO now. So I work with them all the time. And I was like, Mr. Ian Abercrombie was Mr. Pitt, and he passed while we were actually in the process of recording the show, and he's our Ganthet. And yeah, man, that was I'm so glad that I got the chance to actually work with him. for the short amount of time that I did.
Wow. Yeah. Huh? Sounds exciting. Wow.
Yeah. So it's been a really, really fun ride. And it's also been really fun to work with Bruce Tim in a larger capacity, because I worked with him on Crisis on Two Earths. I worked with him. I did a Batman the Animated Series episode when I was really, really young.
Yes, you did.
Back in 92.
Yeah. What, that made me like 12, 13? And
yeah. I was 19 at the time.
Yeah, Michael is the oldest out of the three of us here.
Young Michael, if I...
Yes, it was... you played young Michael Stromwell, yes, that's right.
Yes.
Yeah, so this is the most I've worked with Bruce, and then I've gotten to work with a bunch of other great people, like Giancarlo Volpe, who's one of our producers, and Jim Krieg, I worked with on a movie for Cartoon Network called Fire Breather, it's been good. I've gotten to work with some people that I've worked with before, and some completely new people, and Bruce, and that's always great. So,
yeah, that is cool. Bruce Tim is very neat.
Yes, he is awesome. So, we will get him at some point.
That would be awesome. Can you give us any say teasers as to the second season? What do you know?
You're going to see the Manhunters. You're going to see the Anti-Monitor. Stuff with Aya and Razor gets pretty crazy.
Well, she does look like his dead wife, so.
That's true.
But see, you'll see me get my ass kicked by Chip the Squirrel, Green Lantern.
Oh, and can't wait for that. Yeah. Well, season one wrapped up so nicely.
Yeah.
It was like, wow, you know, it was so well written. I just really hope that season two is as good.
It definitely is. It definitely is. There's new characters. You're going to see Guy Gardner, who is voiced by Diedrich Bader, and he is perfect as the best kind of douchebag you will ever see. And
nice.
Get to see how that affects Hal. Let's see. What else can I talk about? I think that's probably all
that's
I can
about
say.
It? And oh. You're already pushing the boundaries of the non-disclosure agreement. All right, so
there's going to be.
So, have you been? Oh, put it this way: from what I can tell, looking at your IMDb record, you do a lot of superheroes.
Yes.
Did you ever want to be a villain?
Well, yeah, absolutely. It's I've gotten to do a little bit of that. I play Valtor, who's like this evil wizard on the Nickelodeon dub of this Italian show called Winx Club. There's been some other stuff. Got to be the bad guy in Shattered Dimension. Edge of Time. And then, you know, there's been some other stuff. I've been like Ocelot on Metal Gear. And
That was Metal Gear 3. That was, Mike Layden's going to kill me. I forget the title, the subtitle. Snake Eater. Was that young Ocelot?
Yes, that was...
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
Revolvers kick ass.
Yes, he is.
That's cool. You think the... See, now what we need is like a shattered glass evil Jack.
Yeah, absolutely, right?
There you go. That would sound cool. I could see that.
I definitely would like to do more villain work. Because, I mean, I've done a good amount of it, but it's been smaller roles. I'd like to really be able to develop a more villainous character more fully over the course of, you know, several episodes or whatever. Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Now we're going to transition into what is probably our favorite topic of this, which is Transformers Prime. God, I love this show.
Happy.
I think that you've said somewhere that you were a fan as a kid of the original, right? You grew up watching G1, right?
Yeah, like I wanted every toy, but we didn't have a lot of money, so I didn't really get anything. I wanted Optimus Prime really, really bad, but those were really, really pricey at the time. You know, my dad was already working three jobs, and I had a sound, and I took that toy everywhere. And, you know, I had that would go in his chest and all that. Like, that was my favorite toy. And, well, actually, Optimus Prime would have been my favorite, but I didn't have one. So
right.
In fact, toy. And, yeah, man, I was a huge fan of it, a huge fan of the show. And yeah, it was great to actually to come in and be able to be a part of the new one. And especially when I saw how much more they were going to kind of delve into the lore and really flesh it out like that, that was super, super cool to me.
Yeah. I have enjoyed the third season a lot more. I'm sorry. The second season a lot more than I did the first season. I was, a vocal critic, let's say.
He's an old fuddy-duddy that doesn't like it. He's like, oh, it's G. If it's not G1, I don't care.
Well, no, it was funny because David Wise wrote an episode.
Yeah.
Wrote an episode for Prime, and I hadn't actually seen it yet, but, you know, I'm a big fan of David Wise. So I replied to him on Facebook and said, you know, I hope your episode turns out better than some of these episodes from the first season, because, you know, those are kind of crap. And the writer from Prime apparently follows David Wise and called me out on it and said, hey, you know, one of the writers from Prime, I don't remember his name offhand, but he's like, hey, what the hell, man? And I said, well, okay, let's just hope that season two turns out better. And I'm happy to say it has. I'm really enjoying the storyline so far.
Awesome. Glad to hear it. So what's what you like about season one, just out of curiosity?
You know, I had a problem with the way they were jumping around. I mean, you start off with robot zombies. And, okay, I dig zombies. I dig Transformers. I can see them putting the two together. And they did that for a couple of episodes. And then they said, oh, you know, no, we need to bring back Unicron. And then you've got Unicron in the worst possible way. You know, oh, he's actually at the center of the Earth. And that just made me cringe. And I'm like, you know, first of all, we don't need Unicron. It seems like every time they bring up a new iteration of Transformers, oh, we need Unicron in there somewhere.
See, I disagree with him on this point, because this is probably the most unique way of ever introducing Unicron in any of the series. I mean, the fact that Unicron is now the core of the Earth. So essentially they're saying that all of humanity is coming out of Unicron's bad blood. And I think that is so unique. I think that's a unique way to bring him in versus, ooh, me big planet, me going to destroy everything.
I love seeing you know, things introduced in a way that they tie into our reason for existence. Like I love the ambiguous but kind of clear-ish way that Battlestar ended, and where you could kind of jump off from that and think, oh, well, maybe that's how we're here, or, you know, like.
No, okay, all right, let's all forget. Oh, they were angels the whole time.
La la la.
No, I just, you know, I loved that show, and by the time they got done, they just, yeah, I don't know what they did. They just dropped the ball on that one. But I mean, I'm happy to say that they've picked up the ball on Transformers Prime, and I was kind of iffy on the, you know, the whole Orion Pax thing. You know, I think that they, it almost felt as if they did the whole Unicron, you know, sidestep off in order to come back and do Orion Pax. Oh, okay, that gives us the perfect reason to have him be Orion Pax.
Right, but would you rather have just a straight up flashback scene saying, oh, hey, I'm Orion Pax, I'm shaking Megatron's hand before he rips it off my arm?
But the nice thing about the nice thing about the Orion Pax is that led us to the Iacon records, which gives us the relic search, which gives us all this really meaty backstory and a chance to, you know, to see characters who don't normally interact start interacting. You've got Ratchet and Wheeljack together. You know, you've got all sorts of really interesting things happening now that wouldn't have happened if it hadn't have been for the Relic Hunt. And the Relic Hunt itself was really interesting because you end up with all these different locales. I mean, they went to New York City.
Yeah. What terribly were you gonna cool. say, Josh?
I want to get a Wheeljack toy really, really bad. I think that his character design is so badass, and I love his fighting style.
Yeah.
Really.
Take that next question, Michael.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just getting so sidetracked. Where was I? Did you audition for any other roles besides Jack?
No, I didn't actually. That was what I went in auditioning for. Didn't get really called in for anything else. That was what I auditioned for, and really, with him, I pretty much just. He's kind of like Peter Parker. Peter Parker didn't have any powers. He doesn't have that release that Peter has when he's in form. He doesn't have that escape. I mean, he's kind of just living in his teenage awkwardness, and now, you know, he's got to keep this secret about what could
about this hot chick motorcycle. That's really what it is.
Well, now they got his mom involved. What happened to his mom? She came in. She was hitting on Fowler, and then she disappears.
You'll see more of the mom. I love that they've put June in there and really made her important. And I mean, you'll definitely see more June. But it definitely grounds Jack more. You see more of why he is who he is, and where he gets a lot of his inner strength.
And according to Ratchet, he's, you know, the human version of Optimus Prime.
I love hearing that, because it shows that there's greatness in all of us, and that even the strongest person didn't necessarily always start out that way, or strongest anything didn't always start out that way. That really strength kind of comes from within, and that somebody as small as Jack could still affect such great change. I think that's a great point to make.
Yeah.
And he got to go to Cybertron.
Yes, he did. Hey. Oh, boy. Tell us what the room is like for a fan of Transformers getting to work with the Peter Cullen and the Frank Welker. I mean, essentially, you're living all of us 80s kids' dream right now.
I think you can imagine and more.
I don't want to make everybody jealous, but it really...
Yes, you do. Don't lie.
Okay, fine. I do. It,
I'm jealous already. Yeah.
You think that they put processing on Peter Cullen's voice? No. When he opens his mouth, that's the sound that freaking comes out. Like, that's what he does that voice. It sounds like he is a robot. Frank is amazing. The Megatron voice still gives me chills after all these years, and I love how with age it's become so much more menacing, and there's just more of a weight to it than there was in G1, which he's not always, you know, at turned up to 11 or 12. I mean, there's times where he's just down at the bottom, and he doesn't even have to say it loudly. It's just, he'll say one word, and the inflection is so it's so potent that it just kind of makes you shake, man. And he's always, they're all jokesters. He's always messing around. He's always just doing voices here and there, and they're always perfect. And it's great. And then a lot of the newcomers as well. I think that Steve Bloom has really, in my opinion, redefined Starscream. I can't really hear any other version of Starscream now other than it.
When we talked to Steve, he told us, because we specifically brought up his when he goes into Lada mode, like when he gets that excitement in it, and he's like, yeah, whenever they want me to do that, they just throw up jazz hands, and I'm like, oh my god.
That this has made me now see Starscream in a different way. Like, if it was a totally different universe, I could totally see Starscream as like hosting a talk show, like hosting a gossip show.
Channeling Chris Latta as he channels Maury Povich.
And somebody has started a Tumblr blog called The Daily Scream, and it's just dedicated to Starscream. That's how I see him. He's that grandiose and that stuck on himself. He wants to be important, and it doesn't matter what he has to do to do. And that's really where a lot of his crazy and stuff comes from. Like, and people that are that crazy, it's like, I'd be just as scared of Honey Boo Boo's mom.
Oh, that's terrible.
It's one at all costs.
And, I know. I didn't even know what that was until a couple of days ago. And my family made me watch an episode of it, and I it made me hurt inside.
Yeah. It right in the feels, man.
That's terrible.
TLC is not learning. It's the laughing channel.
It's laughing at other people at their expense. It's awful is what it is. I can't even think about that. I'm going to have to move on. Yes. How is it working with Kevin Michael Richardson on two different shows concurrently?
It's great. Sometimes we'll kind of get stuck in the other mode and have to be like, oh wait, I have to be younger in this one. But yeah, I mean, it's Kevin, you know, like I don't even know how to describe it. We're old friends, man. We joke around. It's surprising that we get any work done at all. And if John DiMaggio's in the room with myself and Kevin, like it's really a wonder that any work gets done at all.
Just look at, tell us the story.
Bouncing back and forth of just a filth is crazy. And then Ray Dalio will say something that makes everybody in the room, including all of us filthy dudes, blush, and we're like, oh my god, just say that. Like she can shut a room up immediately by out filthing the Filthmeisters. It's crazy, man.
I'm sorry, who is that? I missed it.
Ray Dalio.
Oh, great. Yeah, okay. I'll hear that. See that. That's funny.
The stuff that she says sometimes, and yet she never loses her class. It's the weirdest thing. She is such a dichotomy. It's crazy.
That's funny.
That's awesome. So do you have a funny Kevin story that you could tell us?
Hey, Kevin.
No one knows at this point.
Let's see. Probably nothing that's like even PG rated that I can.
Well, we're explicit, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but I don't like.
You can't ruin that superhero image, huh, Spidey?
I can hear you blush from here. Okay, well we can move on then. Yeah. Who are some of the other voice actors that influenced you?
Aside from the obvious, you know, Peter Cullen and Frank Welker,
clear idols aside,
complete idols. Honestly, I get inspired by just about everybody I work with. I mean, Kevin has been almost like a mentor to me. But just, I love watching people that work, and there's always something that you can gather from everybody that you work with. I'm trying to think of who else would be a really, really good, somebody that I've really, Tom Kenny. Tom Kenny, Tom Kenny has such a rich knowledge of like, of past cinema and of like character archetypes and all of that, that it's really awesome to watch him work, because, he'll do this character and he'll be able to tell you like what inspired that, and then he'll tell you the movie, and then you got to go to Netflix or you got to go to wherever and now watch. And then
you got to look it up.
Yeah, he's just turned you into a whole different a whole new actor or this or that. I mean, there's a Tom's great with that. And then DiMaggio, yeah, I mean everybody. I can't really put my finger on just one actor. And then I mean, I get a lot of inspiration from on camera actors and personalities. Like, I grew up watching shows like Family Ties, and so a lot of my awkward teen ish kind of stuff comes straight from like people like Michael J. Fox I'll throw some Michael Cera in there, or there's been, you know, stuff like who else you know, just actors and a lot of Matthew Perry, like Friends era Matthew Perry,
yeah
just that kind of silliness, and even seeing people in life. Like there's a lot of people that I just meet randomly day to day, and there'll be something that is a little off or a little on about them or whatever that's interesting, and that's what you got to roll with, because that's where you get your characters from. You get them from real life, you know. Yeah. every And that's when they really resonate, because everybody will be able to see that and say, I know somebody. That's the best place that I would really say I pull my inspiration from is just the people I meet.
Yeah. I'm going to have to listen for that Matthew Perry next time I hear one of your voices too. have you ever seen something in a script that you refuse to say?
No.
It's
well,
like, whoa, hey, I'm not. Nah, that's not right. You know, that type of thing.
Well, no, because if the writer has put it there, it's probably there for a reason. So you just kind of you have to go through the script and make that work. I mean, that's our job as an actor is to not question what the writer did, but really figure out what the motivation for the writer writing that was. Why does this character say that? If this resonates, if this makes me feel ill to say, well, it doesn't. It obviously doesn't make this character feel ill to say it, or does it?
Right.
We gotta as actors really figure out what that motivation is and make it ring true, make it something that would be believable for somebody else to hear, and consistent with that character that you're playing.
Okay. So,
I mean, if there's something that's really, really off the wall, then that's more of a challenge to me, where I'm like, oh shit, I gotta figure out how to make this work. All right.
So you took the job, you're the character, you gotta say the line. But if we back up a little bit, are there any roles that you wouldn't take? Because, you know, I don't know, maybe it was a not so much a bad role, but a bad character that you didn't agree with, or?
No, not so much. It would just be another challenge. I mean, that's that. Usually the ones that are the toughest ones to play are the ones that I really want to do.
Well, we were, it's funny. We were talking with Steve Bloom not too long ago, and we asked him the same question. He said, well, there was to one time when they asked me to do tentacle porn.
Okay.
I will link you on your Facebook, Josh, for that interview so you can listen to it for yourself.
That was a good answer. I was like, oh, okay. All right. Draw the line at tentacle porn. All right. Okay. I get that. But I think he does a lot more anime.
Oh, yes. Yeah, he does.
A lot of anime. I don't think the Marvel or DC or, you know, any or Hasbro properties are going to end up saying anything like that on television.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the main reason I probably wouldn't do it is because I make a lot of my money doing mainly kid, like a lot of kids programming. I don't want to be the guy
who's
working here because he's doing tentacle porn over there.
Man.
Very nice. So let's get away from that topic because it's a little toxic. Let's talk about conventions.
Yes.
Have you been to any of the fan conventions?
I'm really just starting to do a little bit more of that now. I just got a convention agent, and so I'm going to start doing more of that. I mean, I've done Comic-Con and WonderCon and the really, really big ones. And then last year I did a convention called Yomacon out in Detroit. And I really had a great time there because it was a much smaller convention. It was all limited to one hotel and a couple of, you know, pretty rooms in there. But if you look at the ratio of people that actually went and dressed up and cosplayed and all of that compared to Comic-Con, I'd say it was probably a good 85% of people, if I had to make up a number, that were in costume. And the environment was so friendly, it didn't really feel corporate at all. It was just people that really enjoyed this stuff that wanted to get together and hang out. And that was awesome to me. Like, I love seeing it. So I really had a good time there. And I actually think that I'm going, I got invited back. I guess I didn't piss him off too much. I got invited back. So that's in November.
I think the beginning. Wow. I think that's a 6-hour drive for me. I don't think I'd be able to make that one. You should come to Chicago.
Well, now that I have a convention agent, then I'll probably be at more places, but, I would love to start doing more conventions. It's always a lot of fun to meet people that share, because I mean I share the same interests. Shows, but I love to watch, I love watching cartoons. I love playing video games. I love talking about all this stuff. And so this is really it. I mean, it's hanging out with my crowd. So I definitely want to get out and do more.
Awesome. All right. Before we go, would you like to inform the fans of where they can interact with you online?
Yes. You can find me on Twitter at Josh Keaton. I have a Tumblr blog as well. and Facebook fan page. It's Facebook/Josh Keaton's page, or joshkeaton.com, I think, has links to everything. But yeah, I try to answer as quickly as possible. And yeah, I'm always down to chat. So
awesome. Cool. Also, before we go, remind everybody as far as what's coming up for you, that the stuff that you can tell people to look out for, that is in the public knowledge. What's what do you got going on? I know Prime is still going on, but what else?
I'll definitely pick up a copy of Green Lantern, the DVD, if you haven't already. Basically, what ended up happening with Green Lantern is that everything is really kind of hinging on ratings for season two, as well as the DVD sales, because we don't have a toy line. Mm-hmm. And the way that all came about is a lot of toys were still stuck in stores from the movie, and toy stores didn't really want to order new toys because they still had all the movies. And it kind of fell on deaf ears that, hey, this is a totally different Green Lantern. They're like, well, we still have all these Green Lantern toys. So,
right.
So we're really just stuck relying on ratings and DVDs. So definitely pick that up if you want to see more Green Lantern. Transformers Prime is out right now, and new episodes are airing. So check that out. I think somebody sent me something about like a Spectacular Spider-Man Awareness Day, where they want to kind of mobilize people to write to get the second season put out on DVD, and to pick up Spectacular on iTunes and whatnot, to show that there is a demand for it and people still want to see it. And alternatively, you can find that, I think it's on sale at Costco right now. Somebody sent me a link to something, but you can pick those up and keep that alive. And then in the next few weeks, I'll be able to talk a little bit more about a big video game thing that I've been doing. So that'll definitely be fun.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
I'd like to thank Mr. Keaton for taking the time to chat with us in this Tooncast Beyond interview. We will ask you to hold the line, and we'll be back after that.
Girls, girls, girls from all over the country have entered the I Want a Date Brendan Leonard contest. Only one will win a date with ABC Family's most eligible bachelor. Monday on Switched. Adam from Connecticut and Mandy from Oklahoma exchange lives.
I was not expecting it to be a girl.
Adam gets the XYZ on being a lady.
When they told me I was going to the cosmetology school, I didn't know what to think.
But being a lady also means being in good company.
I did think she was a cutie, actually. She was Miss Teen Oklahoma.
Here's the XYZ. 69% of teens think flowers are romantic. Switched, Monday at 4:30, 3:30 Central on the XYZ on ABC Family. Ready for what's coming up? Next on Hang Time, Antonio's moving from Texas just to be close to Christy. Here's the XYZ. According to our online poll, 28% like the idea of a long-distance relationship. Wait till you get the phone bill. Next on 7th Heaven, Matt finds out he got a job because of his grandfather. Here's the XYZ. According to our online poll, 40% think the key to success is networking. Kissing up works, too. The Brendan Leonard Show, weekdays at 5:30, 4:30 Central on the XYZ on ABC Family.
Boy, am I glad to meet you. I'm Hercules. And this is Pegasus. I need your help. I want to become a hero, a true hero.
I like the way you think, Your Highness. Okay, we're going to need two of these. Ooh, one of these. A half dozen... What are those? How well you keep these flesh creatures in their place, Loki. Are you not the greatest of all titans?
Last thing I remember is getting stuck in that wander mold sinkhole.
Whoa, where are my clothes?
Nuts, nuts, get your nuts. We got all kinds of nuts. Brazil nuts, walnuts.
Get your hands off my nuts.
This is all my fault. I was weak. I passed out the V-Buddies, and then my kung fu moves wound up kung fu-y.
You want me to trust a gnome to lead the way to Estella? Forget it. This is my fiancé we're talking about.
Zeus turned him into a giant demon man-wolf.
Scary.
Sorry.
What's he gonna do, bore us to death with another lecture on the joy of the Paleozoic era?
Oh my god, that was so awesome talking to Josh Keaton. It was just great.
There's
a few
cool
times where I wanted to ask him if he was Michael Keaton's son. I know he's not, but...
Weird. I think Michael Keaton is actually a pseudonym.
No, I think Josh Keaton, it's the Keaton part on Josh is the pseudonym. I've seen his real last name before.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was pretty cool.
He's a very nice guy to talk to.
Yes, yes, he is.
It's a very good conversation.
Awesome, awesome. So, we will catch you next time here on Tooncast Beyond.
See you later.
Key card. So what's it do?
It grants access to Vector Sigma, the repository of the wisdom of the primes.
Is that some sort of supercomputer?
So we can just download Optimus's memories back into him? Great. Which one's the big V? Over here? Somewhere in back?
Vector Sigma is more than a supercomputer, Jack.
Why send a boy to do a bot's job?
Because only a prime can access Vector Sigma. Or one chosen by a prime. Optimus gave the key card to Jack. It is now imprinted with his unique biosignature.
So you mean Jack's like some kind of honorary prime?
Let's just say Jack is the only one who can return Optimus to the Autobot we knew.
But why would Optimus willfully endanger a human? A child?
I'm not a child, Mom.
Maybe Optimus believes there's more to Jack than meets the eye.
Two body slam burger specials. Enjoy.
Hey, Jack.
Sierra.
How come I never see you around?
What are you talking about? We have chemistry together. I mean, class. Chemistry class.
I mean, outside of school. I never see you at any parties or the mall.
Well, mostly I'm here. Wearing the hat. And you never can study too hard for the old SATs, you know. And there's some other stuff. Don't go anywhere. Welcome to KO Drive-In. May I take your...
5 p.m., Jack. Your shift is over. Let's go.
Oh. That kind of stuff.
Sierra, wait. She's my mother.
Your mom looks good in leather. On your bike.
Didn't mean to decimate your social life.
Not the first time. Any sign of Optimus?
Not today.
Not yet.
We don't actually know what Optimus would have done because he's not here!
You're pretty good at stating the obvious, Bulk. Anything else you'd like to mention that we already know?
Nothing I can say in front of the children.
Hey, aren't we overlooking one positive? Nobody's talking about what the cons just got their claws on.
Yes, we managed to allow them to finally acquire a power source for their space bridge.
And how exactly would that be a positive?
We let them finish building their space bridge.
Why? So they can bring more zombies back from Cybertron?
No. So we can commandeer it. And use it to send me to Cybertron.